Welcome to the Giants Talk Podcast. Here's Alex Pavlovich and Cole Kuiper. I know those guys.
Giants fans, welcome to another episode of Giants Talk. I'm Cole Kuiper, along here with Giants insider Alex Pavlovich, and we're here to bring you another episode of some Giants content. Giants Talk comes to you every Monday and Thursday right here on the NBC Sports Podcast Network, available wherever you listen to your podcasts. As we do every Thursday episode, later on we'll be joined by Giants broadcaster Dwayne Kuiper. But first, we're going to talk a little Giants Cardinals, a little... What else you want to cover? Maybe the City Connect jerseys?
I think we have to touch on the City Connect jerseys. They really snuck those in on a, not a holiday, but a holiday Monday, kind of, at like 7 in the morning. So those have to be discussed.
Okay, we'll get to those. But first, Giants Talk is brought to you by Wendy's. Right now at Wendy's, get two breakfast sandwiches for just $4. All right, normally we would go through game by game and kind of break down what happened in this most recent Giants series. But I want to focus on one thing, and that is the two Giants killers in the Cardinals lineup.
Oh, no.
Yeah, okay. Right?
Yes, the two others.
We've been seeing a lot of – each team has one guy we fear, but the Cardinals have two. Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, a couple of names Giants fans know very well. And they had themselves quite a little series, Alex.
Yeah, I think we were wondering over the weekend what would happen when you get two guys like this together, whether they will cancel each other out or whether they will double their powers. I wouldn't say they doubled their powers, but they came pretty close. So, they really did not have an off night. Even, I guess, game three would be their off night, but Goldschmidt did have an RBI single, and obviously Arenado had a huge double play there late in the game. But Arenado drove in the first run. Goldschmidt scored the first run. So, yeah, they were involved. Game one, 3 hits, a walk, RBI, and a run. Game two, 5 hits, 4 RBI, 3 runs, ooh, a home run from Arenado. They were part of just about everything, and it's kind of like if there was anything else beyond them, really, the Giants would have been in a lot of trouble, I think, tonight. But, those guys are good. It was funny. I forgot who was – I think Crawford was asked this on Tuesday night about – what makes those guys so special against the Giants. And he's like, well, they do it to a lot of people. So yeah, they're good, but they're especially good against the Giants and especially good at Oracle Park.
That double play you mentioned, I think was the big moment towards the end of the game, I think in the eighth inning. I think Tyler Rogers deserves like some sort of award for getting out of that.
Yeah, I would say build him a statue, but I think Alex Wood gets the statue for striking out Goldschmidt and then getting Arenado to pop up in the sixth inning. So Alex Wood did a very nice job at his best start in a couple months. By the way, we should start tracking Alex Wood's performance bonuses because he's made a cool $250,000 over the last few starts. But remember, he signed a $3 million deal and had a lot of performance bonuses in there. So good for him. He's made 15 starts in the first half and has made some money out of that. But and it should do very well in the second half if he continues. But
bet on yourself. I love that attitude.
Yeah, he did. He bet on himself. DeSclafani did too. And both those guys look like they made the right call. What Rogers did there, you know, he gets in trouble with the ground balls. We saw it on the infield single, but he can get himself out of trouble just as easily. It's like a weird, different kind of torture. Like he's not walking guys out there, but you just hope that the ground ball finds a glove.
You do. Thing I also wanted to touch on, speaking of guys on second base, Yaz on second base, what was going on there, Alex? I know you had a chance to talk to him during post game. Was that a little bit of taking a peek at the signs, taking a peek at the catcher's glove location, or just some gamesmanship?
Yeah, it's called a cat and mouse, so we'll go with that. And I will say he's like is mild mannered, and I don't know if is polite a bad thing to say about somebody these days. I don't know if athletes want to be called polite, but like he is what you see on the field. Like that's what we get in the clubhouse. That's what we get on Zoom. Like he is just very approachable and very mild mannered, and really has not had even like a sniff of anything controversial in his time with the Giants. So it was really interesting to see him be the one on second base, but we're going to put his explanation here because he was more than willing to talk about it after the game, and here's what he had to say.
I knew that they had changed signs at least three times while I was on second base, so I figured that they thought that I was doing it then, so I was just like, I'm just going to kind of keep rolling with it. It's like seeing a little opening into a window and trying to climb through it when you can't really do it and you get a big hole and have an opportunity to try and get the focus on you instead of the hitter. You know, it was something that I thought was going to be something to take advantage of, whether it's just kind of moving around or, you know, changing whatever you're doing out there to make them think one thing. And, you know, when in turn, it's not the case. So, you know, it's just it's a mental game out there, and it's a little bit of cat and mouse that we all play from time to time.
So, yeah, cat and mouse. I don't know, you know, which side you want to come down on. I don't know if he had anything. I don't know if he was trying to, you know, he claimed it was a little bit of acting, but definitely the Cardinals felt like he might have had their signs. And Oviedo, he said afterwards it was a misunderstanding. Obviously, a moment we don't see very often. That's like a Bumgarner Puig moment, not a Mike Yastrzemski 23-year-old rookie pitcher moment. But really interesting and just a little spice at the end of this homestand. I appreciated it. I like moments like that. It's always nice to throw those in.
I appreciated it too. And I'm gonna say I think Yaz is doing a little fibbing in his quote. I think
a little Zoom acting.
Acting
was in Zoom, not on second base.
Exactly, Alex. Yeah, exactly.
I don't disagree there. But the funny thing is, like, the whole point is to get Flores a fastball, right? And Flores got a fastball right down the middle and flied out to right field. So whatever they were doing, it worked, but it didn't work.
Yeah, fair.
That's why I don't have a problem with it. We should get, like, we should save that one for your dad at some point too. But I don't know. It's a lot of teams do it. We saw in the Dodgers series, like, every single time there was a guy on second base, Buster Posey's getting paranoid. So it's part
of
the game.
Nothing wrong with that. As long as you're not involving buzzers and trash cans and cameras, go for it. Steal away runners on second base.
I'm cool with that. I mean, if you're that quick, go for it.
Go for it. Overall, the series was a little less than ideal. Giants avoided the sweep, obviously, in game three. But those first two games were winnable games. I'll just put it that way. Definitely winnable games, and the matchup was a matchup beyond the two guys we talked about earlier that I think favored the Giants. The one kind of silver lining here, the shining cloud, is that we talked a lot about how the Dodgers had a really easy end to their first half, and they're looking like they might get swept, Alex.
Yeah, they have, as we are talking here Wednesday night, I'm going to need that Wendy's breakfast on the way out of here. Late Wednesday night, the Dodgers got swept or lost the third game earlier tonight. They have one more. Clayton Kershaw went on the IL as well. So they're, you know, they're in a bad place in terms of pitching depth right now. It seems like they go with a bullpen game seemingly every other day. And I we'll see what happens with Kershaw. I think people know that you and I are pro Kershaw. I would like any important Giants Dodgers games in September. Well, they don't play in September really, but later this month, it would be great if they included Kershaw. But, you know, I don't know that we'll see Bauer again. So they need another starting pitcher, and they have not played very good baseball in Miami. And that's a weird team. Like, that team has a terrible record, but they have the best run they had the best run differential in the NL East for most of the season. So, we saw them. They're kind of spunky, and they've taken three from the Dodgers. And the end result is the Giants, I don't think, have played very good baseball for the last 10 days. And they're taking a 1.5 game lead into their off day, and will take a lead in the NL West at least one game into that final series against the Nationals. So I think we were worried. We thought on Sunday that they might lose that division lead. I don't know. I think now they might hold it. I have a question for you, because you and I have made a bet on this.
Oh, boy.
Who do you now view as, with everything going on with the Dodgers, who do you view as the bigger threat over the second half?
Oh, that is a great question.
That the Padres would win the division.
All right. Well, I'm still going to say the Dodgers are the threat. I think the Padres have a lot of stuff to figure out right now. They're slipping. I think, what are they, 4.5 back? It's pretty crazy to look at the standings. Yeah. and kind of take a peek at the NL East, where any one of those three teams would be in first place. I mean, in most divisions, I think any one of these three teams would be in first place. But
I think it's pretty clear that one of these teams is going to win the West and the other two are going to take a short fight for a wild card game, you know.
Yeah, and so, those wild card games are going to be bloodbaths.
Yeah.
I can't wait. But, yeah, I think it's going to be Giants versus Dodgers for the number one seed, and then we figure out who ends up stuck with the Padres.
Okay. We're getting into the break here, so, when we get back from the break, we're going to have to talk trade deadline. And I'm just really interested because the Dodgers have not, they hold their prospects. The Giants obviously want to hold their prospects. AJ Preller does not care. He's going for it. So it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks because you can kind of see very glaring holes in Los Angeles and you can see what the Giants need. And then you can see what the Padres need too. And it's like, who's going to make that move? So we'll get to that after the break though.
Yeah, that's the trade deadline conversation, it's been the last 4 or 5 years. Do we buy? Do we sell? What do we do? Is it worth it? I don't know, man. I don't have any faith. Nah, faith is the wrong word. I don't have any expectation that the organization is going to be making any big moves. We'll put it that way.
Well, they're going to trade for somebody's AAA pitcher, and he's going to end up going like 6-2 in the second half. So
there we go.
But we'll get to the break.
We did talk about how we wanted to touch on the City Connect jerseys released by Nike earlier this year. The Giants are, the 8th team out of 9 to get their city featured. Before we get into the Giants, what was your favorite City Connect done previously?
The White Sox were pretty good, right? The White Sox. Yeah. I remember the White Sox being really good. All I can think
about is that video of Tony La Russa wearing it with like a sideways hat and a chain.
I remember the White Sox looking good. I don't, they haven't really stood out to me, I don't think, in general, but.
The Boston one kind of looked like a soccer kit.
Yeah.
I liked the Diamondbacks one, though. That was
pretty
cool.
Good, but you're such a low bar there for the Diamondbacks jerseys.
Yeah, and it in no way represented
do anything,
the
guys.
City.
It just do said, anything, and you will look better than you normally do.
Exactly. Ugliest unis in the league. So Giants got released, and fan reaction was, shall I say, mixed?
Well, fan reaction on anything like this is going to be 80-90% negative, I think, from the people we hear from, because they're the ones who are angry. I will say, I saw a lot of people at the ballpark the last 3 days wearing City Connect gear, especially the bright orange hats and the hoodies. And you know who changed my mind was two guys you know very well, John Miller and Mike Kruko. Because they wore them, and they looked like they were about to record a rap album. And John Miller, who's just one of my favorite people alive, he wore it on the pregame show. He wore the hoodie and the hat, and just decided I'm going to pull the hoodie up over my hat and really just lean into this. So I appreciated it. And I think I don't love the jerseys, and I don't love the color they chose, but I think the hoodies are pretty cool. And I'm fine with the hats. I'm always fine with different hats, like. People like to collect hats. You have three right behind you there. So
that's right.
I don't know. What did you think? You're our Giants fan representative. You're deep on Giants fan Twitter.
Honestly, I think my first instinct was I was a little disappointed just because they're quite understated. You know, a lot of white space. The gradients aren't anything bold and in your face. So if this was something that just was sprung out of nowhere, I feel like I would have immediately been drawn to it more. But since there was so much hype, how are they going to represent the city? How are they going to do this? How are they going to do that? Everyone's speculating. And then it came out and I was a little lukewarm on it. But then I saw the reaction of so many fans just like, ew, barf, terrible. And it's like, dudes, they're not that bad. They're just like kind of low key. Yeah. So I've circled back around to being like, I'm cool with these.
Yeah.
I think they're pretty strong. And maybe that's just me like defending them because I feel like they're getting too much bad publicity. And I feel like they need to swoop in like a white knight for these uniforms. I don't know why, but I am now pro the City Connects, I think.
Okay. We'll see. You know, I'm not pro them wearing them every home Tuesday. I think that's going to get a little
agreed
weird.
There. Agreed.
So I don't love that. And I also... one thing I do appreciate, anything where if the Giants lose like 3 games in a row in that jersey, we can just blame the jersey. And just, so I do like that. I didn't, and I want to put Kevin Gausman's sound in here in a minute because he was really funny, but I kind of agreed with him. I didn't love that they were just like, San Francisco, fog. Cool. Like, good job, guys. You have a lot of fog out there. Like, I don't know. They really leaned into the fog. So I would have gone with other stuff. I think Grant Brisby wrote this. It is a little hard to figure out what to do these days with San Francisco and what makes it, you know, stand out other than the bridge. So I guess they went with the bridge and fog. Like, you could go with somebody searching like five blocks to find a trash can, I guess would be like the 2021 version. That's how I live in the city these days. But I don't know what identifies us right now. So I think it was difficult. But here's what Gosman had to say. I thought he had a really funny suggestion.
Yeah, you know, they're super cool, super unique. You know, I was joking. I think they probably could have made them a little bit more like loud. You know, I think the fog is a little, I think there's just so much more that goes into like the city than the fog. But that's just my personal opinion. I think they should have dressed this up like prisoners at Alcatraz or something. Like, I thought that would have been great. But I don't make those decisions, so. You know, but they'll be sweet. You know, I think the fans will really like them. Like, having the orange, the Golden Gate on the sleeve, like, super cool. And I think the fans will enjoy seeing them.
So that's Kevin. And credit to him after a tough game to be willing to, you know, dig deep on City Connect.
I like that. I think we need more. That's like a minor league uniform idea. We need some more cosplay based uniforms. Get after it.
Yeah, I would, you know, I would say maybe they could have had three different ones or something, you know, like we don't need one. We'll see. I'm reserving judgment until I see him on Friday, because I feel like this is a team that really likes shoes. And I feel like Gabe Kapler is going to bring just, you know, the brightest orange shoes on Friday night to pair with these. Brandon Crawford, you know, is going to do something. Antoine Richardson, Alyssa Nacken has a good shoe game. So we'll see how they actually look in action.
Oh, I want to see Gabe get some like tangerine colored glasses to go with the tangerine orange.
Yeah, he might need that. I guess we'll reserve judgment until we see them on Friday.
Yeah, that's kind of what my dad said when I talked to him about this over dinner the other night. He was saying, basically, until you see them in motion, you can't really judge them. And he also said, I want to see them with high socks. What color are the socks going to be?
Okay.
So, all right. Those are the good two point. Things we need to wait on, apparently, for Dwayne.
We'll check back after a couple Tuesdays and this weekend.
Perfect. Perfect. A few other roster moves before we get to inviting Dwayne Kuiper on. Talk a little all-star action. What, Tyler Beede, our guy, former first round draft pick, back in the mix.
I think it's just important that we mention that, you know, it's been a long road for Tyler, and he had Tommy John last March. He was going to make the rotation. He was very clearly headed for the rotation. He was throwing like 97, 98 last spring, was throwing great, and they were really excited about him. And it's been a long road back, and not because he had really issues with rehab, but just Tommy John's a year that knocks you out for a year as soon as you find out that you have that. So he had that, he had the surgery last March, had to really rehab in a different way because he rehabbed during the pandemic. So, you know, wasn't able to rehab the way pitchers usually do, wasn't able to travel with the team and work with their PTs and be at their facility all the time. So he was back home and really did a lot on his own. And made it back this year. The command hasn't been very good in AAA, but I'm just really curious to see, because this is a pretty important piece. They don't have a lot of young pitchers and guys who potentially can be part of next year's rotation. And he's one of them. Logan Webb is one, you know, maybe Sammy Long, but, and then I think for Tyler too, like, you know, this is, we talked to him about this today. Like, this is not the team that he joined in 2018, when you can go out there and give up five runs in six innings and go, I'll be back out there in 5 days and we'll keep working on things. Like, this is a big test for him. And Gabe Kapler said as much this week when they called him up, that it's an important moment, I think, for Tyler Beede in his career, a guy who's been around a long time and one of the old guard of prospects. We'll see what he has. He should pitch Friday night.
The other one that I was startled by, I don't know that I startled is the right word for the Beede news, but Jalen Davis to the IL bummed me out.
Yeah.
I think he had a hamstring thing, but I'm a very pro Jalen Davis fan. And you pointed out when we were talking earlier, is there going to be space for him when he's back after his hamstring injury?
Yeah. I mean, this was his shot, right? Like he was going to get a chance to play a lot, and we saw it, but he got 9 at bats and then got hurt again. And he's, that's been, he had that in the spring. He got hurt in the spring, ends up on the 60 day. And I think it's going to be interesting when he, you know, somebody seems to get hurt every night. So who knows what will happen by the time he's ready. But Mike Tauchman's on the way back. He should be back on the roster pretty soon. And they're hopeful about Listella and Belt and Longoria later this month. So we'll see if there's room for Jalen when he gets healthy. But it just – I felt really bad for him just, you know, a really tough break for somebody who they were hoping would break out at some point and just hasn't been able to get there.
Super bummer. I know this phrase is usually used ironically, but you do hate to see it for a guy like that. Yes,
you do.
All right. Well, do you want to get to Dwayne Kuiper? Talk a little.
We'd love All-Star? To see Dwayne. So yeah, let's bring him in.
All right. Let's rock and roll.
Hope lives here in California, but during these challenging times, we could all use a little extra support. Visit calhope.org for free COVID-19 emotional support resources or call our warm line at 1-833-317-4673.
As we do every Thursday, we have Dwayne Kuiper here. We're actually talking before Wednesday's game, which means we're talking after one of the lower stretches of the season for the Giants. And a lot of it has to do with two guys that you have watched for a decade now do damage here and have 25 combined home runs at Oracle Park. And it's Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado. And they've done what they always do, except now they're doing it as teammates. So that is my first question for you, Dwayne, is about those guys. How exasperating was it for you and Mike in the booth sometimes to just be like, are you serious? Arenado again? Goldschmidt again? It's the same guys over and over again who are getting to the Giants?
Well, it was, because especially in Denver, and even though Arenado did damage in San Francisco, and obviously Goldschmidt did too, but Arenado, especially in Denver, it just seemed like every time he was going to come up, he was going to hit a home run. And if he didn't do that, then on some holiday, he'd hit for the cycle and do something extraordinary. But what I remember about him is he was always celebrating somewhere on the field, whether it was taking a hit away from somebody or hitting one over the fence or just crushing the Giants in some way. And then Goldschmidt, the thing about Goldschmidt was nobody could hit Lincecum but Goldschmidt. Yeah. I was like, what's going on? Does he have his pitches? Is he not sharing this with the league if he's got his pitches? And he's the nicest guy in the world to hate. I mean, I want to look at the guy and go, God, I hate that guy. I hate that guy now because he's a nice guy, right? I said it again last night when he got a base hit. I was like, look at that smug, nice guy. I hate that guy, right? I wish he would do something like give somebody the finger or something where you would really want to dislike him. But now the good thing, Alex, is you see him for six games and you'd like to see him for more, because if you do, then you're going to see him in postseason. But six games is enough, and they can get out of town anytime soon. I know one thing. They don't take any days off against the Giants.
No, I think we learned that lesson. Six games is more than enough with those two guys.
Absolutely.
Do you remember from your playing days? I mean, we obviously, Cole and I have talked about recently Max Muncy and Will Myers and kind of the Mount Rushmore of Giant killers. Do you remember anybody from your days with either team or – any part of your career where there was a guy who came up and you just were like, that guy's going to hit a homer tonight. That's just what he does against our team.
Yeah. Well, when I was with the Giants, it was Dale Murphy and he was always hitting a home run off of Andy McGaffigan to the opposite field. The games that I started at second base, I always saw his home runs go over my head, and he's a right-handed hitter. He used to pepper the football bleachers at Candlestick Park. And when I was in the American League, you know, the one guy that used to just wear us out was Reggie Jackson. I used to hate watching him with his home run trot because, you know, he had the really great home run trot. The home run trot that I wanted, but I could only use once. And then when I did, I didn't use it at all, and I should have, because I almost slid into second thinking that it was a double. So it was Reggie Jackson and Dale Murphy. And there's a lot of arguments, people that say Murphy should be in the Hall of Fame. And watching those balls sail over my head, I really couldn't argue with him at all.
What about you? Did you have ownage on anyone, be it a team or a pitcher?
You know, I knew that I hit guys pretty good. And then when you retire, you don't have the the wherewithal to try to dig into what's going on. And then when the internet age came out and all the different websites where you can just like that find out what you did against guys. And then I remember going, okay, yeah, I remember hitting Eck really well. I knew that because, you know, we were close friends. But, you know, guys like Dick Tidjo, I never realized that I was 10 for 19 against Dick Tidjo. Do you think he knew that? Probably not, because they were probably 10 really cheap little infield hits somewhere. But 10 for 19. I'll tell you what I am proud of, though, is Darren Chan, I don't know, about 2 or 3 years ago, listed my lifetime average against Hall of Fame pitchers, and it was over 340. So I was like,
wow,
okay, yeah, that's what we're talking about. I said, now you're doing your job, Darren Chan, when you start looking up stuff like that. But ownage is ownage, and we watched it with the two guys that we're just talking about, with Arenado and Goldschmidt.
I just did some quick Googling, and I found a McCovey Chronicles article from 5 years ago with a list of the pitchers you had ownage on. Do you want to hear them?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Dennis Eckersley, you nailed that one.
Yeah.
Jim Palmer, Hall of Famer, three-time Cy Young winner.
Yeah.
Dick Tidjo and Steve Stone got slid in there as like a constellation prize.
Why? Because I hit the one home run off of Steve
you
Stone.
Hit the one, although I think you almost had a second one off him, right?
Top of the wall, bounce back. Unbelievable. Probably kept him from, you know, having a terrible ending. But yeah, I mean, I got in one of those folders back there, it has a list that somebody printed out of everything that you could possibly have done, from how I hit in every ballpark, how I hit on the road in every ballpark, how I hit against every team. And it's kind of fun to look back at it, but nobody really finds it more interesting than just the guy who did it, or maybe even their kids if they're moderately interested.
I will say, you're one time late. I was just looking at Nolan Ryan's numbers against people and randomly saw that you had like a 360 on base percentage against him. So
I did, because I went for a walk a lot.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah. So how are you going to approach Ryan? I'm going to go for a walk. All right. Anybody have a problem with that? I said that one time, Mario Soto, my first year in the National League. Joe Morgan said to Frank Robinson, he said, look, I have a hard time with Soto. Let Kite play today and see how he does. And so it was Joe's idea that I play instead of him. So anyway, after the game, I don't think I got a hit. I think I was 0-for-2 with a couple of walks or whatever. One of the reporters for the Reds asked me, how dominant was Mario Soto? I said, well, in my mind, all I was trying to do was go for a walk. So they put it in the paper the next day, and, you know, Joe came up to me the next day. He had the paper in his hand. He had it circled. He goes, you can't say that. You can't let that guy, you can't give him that much credit by saying you were going for a walk. And I looked at Joe, and I said, Joe, you didn't play. Remember, you chose to have someone else play. So I think I should be able to pretty much say what I would like to say. And he laughed, and then he walked away. But the whole point was, is those old-timers, man, and those guys that were really good, they did not want to give in when they played, and they did not want to give in when they didn't play. And he was trying to give me some advice. But, hey, I did it with Ryan. I went for a walk. I always felt like I'm probably going to get a single anyway. So then a single is a way to get on base, and a walk is as good as a single.
Fair. I want to talk a little bit of All-Star game, because the Giants have three guys heading there, and at the beginning of the season we were thinking they'd be lucky if they had one. But specifically I want to talk Gausman. He's a hometown guy. I believe he's from Colorado, but with the way the rotation is lining up, it doesn't look like he's going to really have a chance to see any innings. Do you think the Giants should have shifted anything around to give him a chance to play in the All-Star game, or is it just focused on getting wins that matter, right?
Well, I think the first thing you do is you check in with the guy. You know, Is it of utmost importance for you, Kevin, to pitch in this game? Is it a life or death matter for you? If do you want to pitch in this game? And then you kind of find out what his temperature is on that. And my guess would be, as Kevin Gausman probably said, you know what? I want to do what's good for the Giants. If that means pitching on Saturday, great. If that means pitching on Sunday, great. Because he knows in his mind, he's going to be on that field. He's going to be on the base, first baseline when he's introduced. His family's going to be, whatever, 20 minutes away from the ballpark where they live. They're going to be at the game. They're going to see him. So I don't think for him the trip is going to be more special if he pitches or not. If he starts, maybe that's different. But I don't think that that's going to be an issue with him getting a chance to start. So I would touch base with him first, Cole, and then I would make an organizational decision after I touch base with him. And maybe you take into consideration what he says, or maybe you don't. Maybe you just draw the line and say, you're pitching on Sunday, and that's it. No questions asked.
Yeah, we actually just talked to him, and he said he's pretty busy just with ticket requests. So I think he has enough on his plate for the All-Star game.
Alex, it ain't cheap either.
No, it's not. We've heard of a lot of guys playing for free for a weekend. I wanted to change gears for a second, and we talk a lot about umpires, and there's this ump scorecard account. You might have seen it, that basically has a scorecard the next morning of every umpire, and it's fun to look at when you have Angel Hernandez the night before, Joe West. And I'm going through today, and the guy they had on Tuesday night, Sean Barber, was basically perfect, like didn't screw much up. And it got me thinking about your partner, Mike, who I think knows umpires better than maybe anybody on the world and just in the world. And anytime somebody comes up, doesn't matter who it is, he says, this is his zone. It's going to be up. It's going to be down. Whatever it is. Does he ever surprise you with that? How does he do that? How does he know these guys so well?
Well, he started getting a book probably 25 years ago, maybe. But I remember when he started out, where he had a piece of paper and he would write the umpire's name down, and then he would write just a few notes about each umpire. And he did that for a full season and then another full season. And then after about the third season, he pretty much had a book on everybody. And then, you know, when new guys come into the league, you know, he adds them to that piece of paper. And it's funny, if you look at the paper now, you know, it kind of starts out, you know, like a normal piece of paper, right? And then it's here and here, and now they're here, and now they're kind of like in the corner, and now the one of the new guys is like real little bitty guy kind of in the corner here, but he's got them all, and he's never that far off from what he tells people. He's not making it up. Eddie Montague, who, for people don't know, is a former umpire, a local guy, umpire 140 years. He wanted that piece of paper, and Mike wouldn't give it to him. And then Frank Robinson came in, and Frank was in charge of the umpires when he came into our booth 15, 20 years ago. And he asked Mike for that piece of paper, and Mike said no. He said, this is my work. I did the due diligence, and I don't want anybody copying my stuff. So it's his, and it's pretty valuable too.
Well, little did we know Mike's sitting on treasure there. I bet Gabe Kapler would love to get a hold of that even.
Yes, absolutely.
I want to circle a little bit back before we let you go to All-Star break talk, just because I kind of want to know, for the players who aren't going to Denver, what's the attitude for them right now? You know, what are they all heading home looking forward to their one chance to get a vacation? What did you do as a player for your All-Star breaks?
Well, Cole, when I was a player, it was much different because I was single.
Okay.
And you know, and what that means is I don't have to deal with a wife or kids that would like to go somewhere for 2 or 3 days. And look, you would have to take a poll of married guys on a lie detector test away from their wives and kids, and you would have to ask them, would you like to sit on the couch and be off your feet for 3 days, or would you like to go camping, or would you like to go to Tahoe, or how about walking around the wine country, or maybe go down to Carmel and walk on the beach, you know, at Carmel by this, and find out really what's the percentage of guys that would say, give me the couch, please. And what's the other percentage of, yeah, let's do the San Diego Zoo where I blister my feet and then I can't possibly play on Thursday. But most of the guys are going to go with what the wives want, and they're going to act like they like it. And you know what? And those guys are good liars too, because you're with your kids, You're with your wife. You're away from the park. You're in the fresh air. It's great. Don't get me wrong. And we did it when I was a broadcaster.
Are you saying when we did all those family trips with the Krukos over the All-Star break, you would rather be on the couch?
Well, you got to remember, Cole, is I was pretty much off my feet broadcasting anyway, right? So it wasn't like I was exuding any energy. But the one thing, it's nice to be at home and not have to go to the ballpark. I mean, I love going to the ballpark, but for 3 days, it's nice not going. And you got to remember, sometimes it's only two because the third day is sometimes a travel day. Not so much anymore. Now the travel day can usually be on Thursday. But those 2 days, Monday and Tuesday, were really, really special for dads and for moms and for husbands. It's a great time for everybody to be together.
Well, 3 days off next week for the Giants. You no longer have to take Cole to the zoo. So I hope you get to just put your feet up and enjoy the break. And we'll talk to you as the second half starts.
Do it, guys. Come on. Let's go.